It's the Pete Callender Show. With more than 20 years as a reporter and radio host in North Carolina, Pete Callender is helping solve the world's problems one podcast at a time. Because he's a giver. And now, here's Pete.
What is going on? Welcome to the show. It is November 19th, 2020. Thanks so much for listening. The show is made possible by patrons like Kathleen, Phil, Matt, Jason, Marlene, Jenny, and Sean, Rhonda, Susan, Mike, Linda Grace. I appreciate all of the support. Couldn't do the show without you. They became patrons to support the program. And you can as well just go to the PeteCallenderShow.com and click on the link that's right there. We've got some really good news. Some good news today. The first rapid at-home COVID-19 test has been approved by the FDA. So that's good news. The FDA announced approval of this first test. It's emergency use authorization. It's a 30-minute test kit from California-based manufacturer Lucira Health. And the test is prescription only, and it's solely approved for those 14 years or older. So you basically take a nasal swab and you jam it up your nose, and then you put that into a vial, and then that plugs into a portable testing unit. And then within 30 minutes, the device interprets the results and displays whether the person tested positive or negative for COVID-19, according to this article in the New York Post. The FDA has already authorized about 300 coronavirus tests to date, but only a handful of these tests actually allow people to collect their own nasal or saliva sample at home. And when you do, then you got to ship it off, and you got to wait like days to get the results. So experts say that if you let people test themselves at home, it actually reduces the turnaround times and it curbs the possible spread of the virus to healthcare workers, because that's obviously who would probably benefit the most from this new application is, or this new approval is, that the healthcare workers, they'll be able to have these tests at their house, and so they can get tested on a regular basis and not have to wait, you know, days and days and days. So if you're like, you know, congregate care facility workers, prison workers, that sort of thing. So that's good news. Also, obviously, the announcement of the vaccines. Now, I think there are at least two that have been announced with 90 to 95% effective rates. And they're saying that these vaccines could actually impact treatments for other types of diseases. So that's all very good news. Very good news. So, but today we're going to talk about the election again. But I wanted to start on a positive note, because here we are on election day 17. And because that's, I'm not even counting the early voting period or the absentee voting period. That so this is just from the election day until today. It's been 17 days. OK, 17 days, which can seem like an eternity, by the way, if you're sleeping on a really bad mattress. Today's show is presented by Mattress Man. Go get yourself a new mattress. Treat yourself to the gift of comfortable sleep. For real. Christy and I bought our mattress from Mattress Man several years ago. It's about 8 years ago. Almost, well, now 9 years. And we love it. It's a memory foam mattress. And we were actually talking last night that, we may be looking to get another mattress. And of course, we're going to go to Mattress Man. Of course we are. We've got friends who go there. I ask you to go there. They support this program. And if you like the program, please support them. And it's very easy to do because they've got the best mattresses and they got huge deals going on right now for the Black Friday specials. 0 down, 0 down, 0 APR for 24 months and 0 payments for 90 days. So the 0 deal, you can't beat that. Plus, you've got the free box spring deal with the purchase of a Biltmore mattress. And they're also offering free adjustable bases. I think I got to talk Christy into this. I'm not sure. I think I like the idea of the adjustable base, though. Like, I'd like to be able to raise up my head a little bit. She could raise the head of her side up as well. And then this way, the cat doesn't sleep on her pillow all the time. That would just have him roll right down the... He does. He sleeps right on top of her pillow every night. And yes, it means constant changing of the pillowcases. So there's that. Oh, also get a queen size gel hybrid mattress as part of the bed in a box deal for just $299. Go check out all the details on their website, mattressmanstores.com. Four locations in Asheville, Arden, and Hendersonville. They ship nationwide. Let the sleep consultants help you find the right bed for you. And if you're local, they've got five-star white glove delivery service. Plus, everybody gets the 120-day comfort guarantee. Experience the difference, like I said, at Mattress Man. Buy local and sleep better. All right, so WRAL reporting on some flaws that they found in the recount petition filed by the North Carolina Supreme Court Chief Justice Sherry Beasley. She is seeking a recount, okay? She is facing defeat because, well, she came up short in the 30-day election period here. In the request for the recount, and she's totally within her rights to do this, by the way. Although, as I understand it, what I've been hearing is that if you don't accept the immediate outcome of the election, then you are trying to destroy democracy. I think that's the standard now, isn't it? That's what I've heard. So Chief Justice Beasley is asking for a recount, alleging that thousands of votes that should have been counted were not. Okay, so there were a whole bunch of these votes. I think they cited around 2,000 of them, and these are provisional ballots. Provisional ballots are what you cast if you show up at the polling station and you're like, hey, you know, Pete Callender here to vote. And they're like, Pete Callender, well, you're not registered to vote here. I'm like, what are you talking about? I've been voting here for 20 years. Doesn't matter. You're not on our register list. You're not in the poll book. I'm like, well, that's wrong. And they're like, well, fill out this provisional ballot as if you were supposed to be voting here. And so you fill out, or I would fill out the ballot, and then they would check afterwards to make sure that, oh, Pete was supposed to be voting there. Turns out we put him in a different poll book or something. And so like, okay, Pete was correct. We count his vote. But if they say, well, no, Pete was voting at the wrong place. He's got early onset dementia. He didn't know that. And so we don't count that vote. Now, this has in the past, by the way, raised some interesting questions. There was a big case about 15 years ago out of Mecklenburg County at the time about what races do you count? And so the Democrats were like, well, if Pete showed up at this precinct and it was the wrong precinct, every vote that he counted for statewide office should work and countywide office should work or should count. I mean, just because he was in the wrong, you know, city council district, but everything else above the city council level, he could have voted in those races. We should count all of those votes. And that had never been done before. Anyway, so these are the provisional ballots. Okay, so there are about 2,000 of them. There's this protest that's been filed by Chief Justice Beasley and the North Carolina Democratic Party. And these are provisional ballots and mailed absentee ballots. Protests went to 90 counties, all right? The 76-page affidavit, according to WRAL's Laura Leslie, it accompanies the protest and it lists the ballots in question. But it wasn't difficult, she says, to find problems with it in our look at just a handful of ballots listed only in Wake County. So WRAL looks at only Wake County and she finds Garner resident Star Goins is her name. And she was upset to hear that Beasley's protest said her ballot was rejected. The affidavit stated that her address, a newly built home, was not recognized by the county elections office. But her ballot was, in fact, counted. Okay? Her ballot was counted. WRAL News cross-checked Goins plus, like, it's unclear from the story whether it's six or eight others, but regardless, more than half a dozen voters that were listed in the lawsuit, basically, in this challenge, demanding a recount, and they found all of them were properly handled. So, no, they weren't rejected erroneously. They were rejected properly, or the Democratic Party got it wrong. The Beasley campaign did not respond for a request or to a request for comment. Wayne Goodwin, though, is the chairman of the state Democratic Party, and he said that the party's data team, the state Democratic Party's data team, put together this affidavit looking for what they believe to be potentially eligible voters. Here's his quote. Quote, "If there was some error made, then we're glad that the ballot was counted." Okay, so your data team put this together, and they're like, "We found all these 2,000 ballots, and these are improper, or they need to be counted." And so when WRAO cross-checks them, they're like, "Okay, the ones we found in Wake County, they were all handled properly." And he's like, "Well, that's the data team, you know. We're glad they were counted, but our data team put this all together." Which prompted Stephen Wiley, who is the caucus director for the North Carolina House Republicans, he responded to this story by tweeting out, "This election cycle, North Carolina Democratic Party sent me Spanish language Joe Biden mailers, as well as digital ads for Greensboro races." He's in Raleigh. "So I am not exactly shocked that their data team didn't nail this assignment either." It's funny because it's true. Joining me now is Dr. Chris Cooper. He is the Madison Distinguished Professor of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University. And you can follow him on Twitter at Chris Cooper, WCU. Dr. Cooper, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Pete. Thanks for having me on.
Certainly. Again. So this was the Super Bowl and the Stanley Cup and World Series all rolled into one for people, I guess, like you and me, with this election now kind of over, sort of over, but not really over. Yeah. So you wrote a piece at Old North State Politics titled "Five Things I Think I Know About the 2020 Election in North Carolina," which, by the way, you're lending credibility and credence to the Dunning-Kruger theory right there, right? You think you know, because you do. Like you are up to speed on this stuff, and you know a lot about this stuff, and that's why you know that you don't know everything. So
right.
You're like, I think I know some stuff. All right, so let's go through this stuff. Number one, you say stability in partisan office holding. I thought this was pretty interesting observation.
Yeah. So, well, thanks. So, and I may actually combine this a little bit with the second one. The way I like to think about it is that the inputs in the election changed, but the outputs didn't. So I'll take these kind of the opposite order and talk about the outputs first. So I was just, you know, going back and thinking, well, remember before the 2020 election when we hadn't had all these debates about what is barbecue and what is not barbecue and how much money is appropriate to spend in an election and, you know, whether Madison Cawthorn is, we didn't know who the heck he was and, you know, everything else that we've gone through. We had in North Carolina a Republican majority in the General Assembly. We had two Republican U.S. senators, one who was elected by a pretty narrow margin. We had a Republican congressional delegation, Democratic attorney general, Democratic secretary of state, Democratic auditor, getting bored yet, Republican lieutenant governor, treasurer, superintendent of public instruction, commissioner of agriculture, labor, and insurance. So you had all these office holders. We have this big election where all this crazy stuff happens. It's all supposed to be game changers. Every day is a game changer. And the partisan distribution of every office I just named looks identical to what it did prior to the election. So really, North Carolina looks a lot the same. The song remains the same for your Led Zeppelin fans out
indeed,
there.
Indeed, indeed. So I noticed the same thing. 6 out of 10 Council of State offices stayed with the party that held it before. I think the superintendent for public instruction, Mark Johnson, he did not run for re-election. He tried to run for lieutenant governor, but a Republican won that seat, and she's only the second Republican to ever hold that seat, Johnson being the first. So that seat was a hold, and that's really surprising, I think, to a lot of education advocates, because that seems to be like the issue that Democrats usually sort of hang their hat on.
No, you're exactly right. So our council of state historically has been overwhelmingly Democratic. So just to grab the attorney general real quick, we've only had one Republican attorney general in the last 100 years in North Carolina. But this education piece is really interesting. We would think that if this idea about issue ownership, political scientists talk about this, they're like, look, Republicans kind of own issues of, say, national defense and the economy. Democrats tend to own issues around education and healthcare. And if you follow that idea, then, yeah, you'd think that the Democrat would have a heads up on education. And that has not been true the last few cycles in North Carolina.
Also, I thought it was interesting. You mentioned Tom Tillis, barbecue photos and failure of photo ops notwithstanding. Second term. And that's unusual for North Carolina as of, you know, late recent history.
No, that's right. This is Jesse Helms' seat, and no one has held on to this seat for consecutive terms since Jesse Helms. Matter of fact, we've gone back and forth across parties each one of these times since Helms. So this is a seat that's gone back and forth. And last time when Tillis won, it was the tightest margin of any at least recent election in North Carolina Senate history. And then, of course, we get Cal Cunningham and the hot dog bun scandal, and then Cal Cunningham and the, you know, tech scandal, and then Cal Cunningham and the things we can't talk about on the radio scandal.
Right. Well, the affair. We just the affairs.
We can say that.
Yeah. I think this is. It's also interesting in that for Tillis, he was trailing Kay Hagan in trying to defeat her, and late in the election cycle, if memory serves correctly, it was there was this issue that popped up about her not attending the committee meetings for, you know, intelligence briefings or whatever, and the rise of ISIS. And sort of this issue comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, she isn't at a couple of committee meetings, and now it's this huge thing, and it leads to her defeat. Much like what happened here, again, for Tillis, is he's not really like a galvanizing kind of a figure among Republicans, and all of a sudden, here comes this issue, I mean, completely self-inflicted by Cal Cunningham, and I think he ended up beating Cunningham by a greater margin than he beat Hagan.
You're right. No, that's exactly right. And at this election's so interesting race for a number of reasons. Most of them, I think, folks are talking about. But one that I haven't seen as much coverage of is, right, two things happened at once. There was a scandal, obviously. But then there was the fact that he turned – when I say he, I mean Cunningham turned the volume down on the campaign, right? Mm-hmm. He went from campaigning everywhere and being everywhere to really not campaigning. At the same time, Tillis cranked the volume up. So I don't think we'll ever know. Was it the scandal itself, or was it the fact that Cal Cunningham thought he could just play the four corners until the election was over, right? So he came – to Cullowhee, North Carolina, not exactly a huge place. And he came to one of the polling sites in Cullowhee. There were no media there. Right. I work across the street from the polling site. I didn't know Cal Cunningham was there. I would have gone to check it out, right? I would have gone to check it out with Tillis or Cunningham or anybody else.
Right.
Who the heck knew? So I think dialing down the campaign did not help him.
Well, that was a response, though, to the affair. Because they purposefully did not want any media there to ask him questions. And so they would go out and do these little photo ops where it looked like he was campaigning, but wasn't really campaigning. So the only way that works is if you just show up someplace and don't tell anybody you're coming. They roll the van behind him, have the signs hung on the van, and it looks like a campaign event, but there's only three people there and they're all staffers. You know, like
that's right.
it's another bad photo op in the Cunningham legacy.
It is. And you know, they say if a tree falls in the woods, no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? If you have a campaign stop and there's no voters there to see it, does it actually have any effect? And it turns out the answer is no, it does not.
Right.
So I think you're right. Of course, that was connected to the affair. But I wonder if he had approached the affair and approached the campaign differently afterwards, if it would have made a difference. We'll never know.
Yeah, I think it would have been different if the affair had occurred earlier. And I think it would have made a difference if there wasn't a second allegation floating out there. Had it occurred earlier, that would have been one thing. I think they could have kind of moved past it, but it was so recent. And mm-hmm. And then you've got the rumor of the second one. He can't go out there and talk because people are going to keep asking him about the second affair. And at some point, it either looks like he either admits that it's true or it just looks like it's true. Either way, it's not good for him. So, all right, we're talking with Dr. Chris Cooper from Western Carolina. Let me tell you what is good for you. Getting your house sold quickly and for more money. I mean, especially if you're trying to get your house sold, right? There's nothing worse than putting your house on the market and then having to wait like a year and a half to get it sold. That's terrible, especially if you end up buying your new house. Now you're paying two mortgages. You don't want to be stuck in that situation, so get your house sold fast and for more money. This is a seller's market, folks. Call Rowena Patton and her all-star powerhouse team. 333-4483. That's 333-4483. Her website, mountainhomehunt.com. She outsells 99% of the realtors in the state of North Carolina. She's the only agent that I called when Christy and I went to buy our house as well. Call her now, 333-4483, and then start packing. All right. So, Chris Cooper, the urban-rural divide. We've been talking about this for years and years. And so that's gone now, right? From what I understand, it's completely gone away, the urban-rural divide. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is not here at all anymore. it's been replaced by something even sharper. No, I mean, so look, we used to talk in North Carolina about the three regions, right? So if you go back and you read all the North Carolina political history in the 50s, 60s, 70s, they'll say, hey, it's about the West versus the East versus the Piedmont. But it is, of course, as you point out, increasingly about urban and rural. So it's just a good example of this. Everybody knows this. In 2016, Trump did the best in North Carolina in urban areas. He did the worst in Trump did the best in rural areas, the worst in urban, and suburban in the middle. Well, this time, if you look at the change in his vote share from 2016 to 2020, each one of those points got even starker. So Trump did better in 2020 in rural areas than it did in 2016. He did worse in urban areas than he did in 2016. He also did worse in suburban areas than he did in 2016. So the urban-rural divide is not only not going away, it's actually getting more pronounced over time.
So what does that mean then for our politics?
Yeah, I think it's scary, right? I mean, we have increasingly, it is urban cities versus rural areas in terms of political persuasion, political attitudes. There's certainly some exceptions to that. You can look at some more rural college towns, right? Jackson County, where Western is, a little more competitive. Watauga County, where App State is, a little more competitive. But for the most part, we are sorting almost perfectly by partisanship. And whether partisanship is the reason or is the cause or the effect, essentially, we don't really know, but we know that it's there, and it's going to make it harder and harder to govern.
You said that we have fewer swing counties than we once did, and I saw that and I thought, well, that makes sense, but then I guess I never really thought about it because we're a swing state, so I guess I hadn't really kind of drilled down that to the county level.
So if there's lots of ways to think about swing counties, but one way is just a real simple one, right? Ones that change their partisan allegiance for president from one election to the other. So from 2012 to 2016, 8 counties out of 100 in North Carolina flipped their partisan allegiance for president. Okay, 7 of those times it was from Obama to Trump. 1 was actually from Republican to Democrat, which is Watauga, which we talked about before. So 8 counties that flipped. From 2016 to 2020, only 3 counties flipped, changed their partisan affiliation: Scotland, Nash, and New Hanover, if you're curious about which ones. So just because North Carolina is a purple state, and I think it still is a purple state, I think it will be going forward, that doesn't mean we got 100 purple counties. It means we got a whole lot of blue ones that are getting bluer, a whole lot of red ones that are getting redder, and fewer that are actually purple.
Yeah. This was interesting, too. I thought there was a lot of people confused as to why certain counties down in the 9th Congressional District did well, but that was, and what I've seen it chalked up to, is the Lumbee tribe and the Trump administration and the Republican Party making overtures to them saying, we're going to get you, you know, federally recognized and supporting that effort. And the swing there was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think it was 13 percentage points, if I remember correctly. And so, yeah, there's been some good state coverage, some pretty good national coverage. I think Fox News had a nice little piece, despite some questionable sourcing of some political scientists in the West. But but they did a nice piece, actually, I thought, on what happened in Robeson County. And I think you're right that the Lumbee tribe did flip in this really interesting way that ran counter to their partisan affiliation, but definitely was apparent in the vote choice, not just Trump either, really down the ticket.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of surprising when people who treat politics as very, very ideological see others who treat it as purely transactional or mostly transactional. They're kind of taken aback by that and say, well, if this is the biggest issue for folks that are living down there, then it makes sense for them to support the person or party that's making those offers.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think it also shows that somebody's listening. I mean, what does everybody want? As kumbaya as it sounds, you want a politician who is listening to your needs and wants and desires and putting the issues that you care about at the top of the agenda. And I think that, you know, is at least one of the things that happened in Robeson County. And again, I believe it was a 13-point movement towards Donald Trump, which is pretty extraordinary.
And your final point here, you say people were more likely to complete their ballot in 2020. This is the ballot roll-off issue that we've discussed over the years. So what is ballot roll-off?
Yes, yeah, so ballot roll-off is a wonky term, I'll grant you. But what we do is the concept describes something very non-wonky, right? So if you're filling out your ballot and you start off at the top, and of course you're going to vote for president, and you're probably going to vote for Senate on down. By the time you get to soil and water commissioner and dog catcher and whatever else, you may just say, I'm done, and just kind of, you know, turn in your ballot. That's ballot roll-off. And so there was a lot of speculation that ballot roll-off would be higher this year. And there's sort of two reasons that I heard. One is because turnout was so far up, because the inputs were way up, then maybe people are just kind of new voters and they're not actually going to fill out the whole ballot because they've never really done this much before. And the other hypothesis that I heard people throw out, hypothesis is a snooty word for educated guess, mm-hmm. for people to throw out, was that perhaps a lot of Democrats would roll off at the U.S. Senate race, that they would say, all right, I'm voting for president. Maybe I'm even going to vote down farther, but I'm going to skip Senate because I just, this Cal Cunningham guy, I'm not really so sure about. It turns out that neither one was borne out in the evidence. So roll off went down in 2020. In other words, more people completed their ballots in 2020 than they did in 2016. So these new voters weren't people that were just fired up at the top of the ticket and got bored on down. They actually filled it on, you know, filled it out much more so than they have. Roll-off was about half of what it was in 2016.
So any ideas? I know it's still very early and, you know, people are still analyzing results of the elections and getting opinions from people and all that. But do you have any indication as to why that would be the case? Is it due to, you know, more people doing the absentee ballot method? And so they've got more time to basically, you know, it's a take-home test. They can spend as much time as they want filling the whole thing out.
That's exactly what I think it is. And I'm not sure yet. I want to see what the roll-off difference was with each of the methods, which I think could actually tell us the answer to that question. But that is my guess. And I think that's exactly right. I've been thinking about absentee by mail as exactly that. It's an open book test. You can take as much time as you want. And so it makes sense to me that if about 20% of the people used absentee by mail in North Carolina in 2020, only about 4% in 2016, that roll-off might go down as a result. So, yeah, I think that is, you know, in all these debates that we're going to continue to have about the way we vote, I think that's one thing we should keep in mind.
Also, COVID closed everything, so people had nothing better to do than to literally go down and vote, spend like an hour at the polling station. Maybe that, I don't know.
It could be that, and it could just be civic education in general was up this time.
You're such an optimist. You really are.
I am an optimist. It's true, but in a slightly less optimistic way, a friend of mine pointed out that even Levi's jeans was telling us to vote this time. Like, if you just turn on the McDonald's reminded us to vote, all of a sudden, maybe it just became cool again to vote.
So why do you think there was this big push to do that this year versus years past? Was this an anti-Trump kind of marketing effort that, like, corporations knew that this was a safe kind of deal? I don't know. I'm asking you to speculate. Yeah. But this is a safe PSA campaign to run, and you kind of get the halo effect from a marketing standpoint.
I think that probably is it. I think Trump definitely, you know, motivated folks on both sides. There's no doubt about it. I think it did remind people why voting matters on both sides. I am interested to know if the very act of voting has become more partisan, if we perceive it as more partisan, right? So if you see somebody walking down the street with a T-shirt on that says vote, are you more likely to think they're a Democrat now?
Yes.
And I think the answer may be yes.
Absolutely.
And I think that's interesting. And I think that may be a shift from just a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think because the voter education campaigns have always been targeted towards young people, generally speaking, the Rock the Vote stuff. I think a lot of that focus goes that direction because you're targeting, and it makes sense, you're targeting populations that don't tend to vote. So you're going to go after that population. And it seems like doing so, you're trying to get young people to vote because they're going to vote Democrat. That's people on the right. That's what they think.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that is what people think. And I think that it, that belief is growing. And the irony, to kind of go back to the what we're talking about at the top, is that we did have all these changes. We did, in fact, have huge turnout, right? You and I had this robust conversation last time that I enjoyed a great deal about whether turnout's a good thing or not.
Right.
Right. Me kind of arguing, yeah, it's a good thing. And you going, eh, Chris, I'm not sure I'm buying what you're selling. But we also had absentee by mail go up. We had election day actually go down. We had all these changes and all these, you know, McDonald's is reminding us to vote. And then in the end, we kind of have the same people representing us that we had 6 months ago. So it's really interesting.
So my side of the argument won, what you're saying.
No. See, no. I would actually argue my side won. Of course I'm going to argue that, Pete, because I'm not going to lay down for you that easy. Well, my point all along was turnout is a good thing, is an end in and of itself. I don't care as much who ends up winning. If more people are participating, then I'm happy. And so I think actually the fact that it didn't have this overwhelmingly partisan result means that maybe we're actually going to sing Kumbaya, hold hands, listen to Grateful Dead music, and enjoy each other.
No. See, I would say that it bore out my hypothesis because the end result was basically the same. So it really didn't matter. Now you've just got more millions of people that are angry because they lost different races. So instead of having people that are like, yeah, I don't care, now you got people to care, and now they're angry that they lost.
Yeah, I'm happy they care and they showed up and voted. And really, the fact that it didn't change the outcomes should suggest none of us should be afraid of high turnout. That high turnout doesn't necessarily change the types of people who voted or the choices they make. It just gets more people to participate in the process.
Yeah. Well, as I say every election cycle, my my talking head pundit wisdom is it always comes down to turnout.
It's true.
It's such a brilliant point. All right. Dr. Chris Cooper is the Madison Distinguished Professor of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University. Thanks for your time, Doctor. I appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, always enjoy talking to you, Pete.
All right. I'm really excited to tell you about Growers Hemp, the newest sponsor of the program based right here in North Carolina. Growers Hemp was created by farmers who knew that they could make small farming, family farming work for them and their families and their neighbors. And at the same time, help people on their wellness journey. People like me. And they succeed when everybody does. That's the business model. Best quality at a price that's affordable. Growers Hemp. I take the CBD oil, take a few drops before I go to bed, and I sleep more deeply than I ever have before in my life. So if you are looking for a natural alternative, Growers Hemp full spectrum hemp extract added to your daily routine. The best quality at a price that's affordable because they control the entire process, actually, from the seed all the way to the shelf. They do the manufacturing. Growers Hemp maintains complete control, so you get the best for lower prices. They also know that you probably have a lot of questions. It's CBD. It's a new industry, especially in North Carolina. So Growers Hemp can guide you every step along the way. They want you to be happy and be satisfied. As with all CBD products, here's the official disclaimer. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. The efficacy of these products has not been confirmed by FDA-approved research. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and nothing I have said is meant as a substitute for or alternative to information from your healthcare provider. So, consult your healthcare professional about potential interactions or other possible complications before using any product. Growers Hemp. Go to growershemp.com, use the promo code PETE, and get 20% off. From North Carolina farmers to your home, Growers Hemp, growershemp.com. It is about the hemp and not the hype. So what else have we got going on in the election world, day 17 of our election? A Wake County attorney who won a local election for district court judge won't get the job because he doesn't actually live in the district. Wait, oh, is that a problem? Yeah, this is amazing that this still occurs, but it does. The Wake County Board of Elections deemed Democrat Tim Gunther ineligible for a district court seat yesterday. He had won this seat by about 13,000 votes. And it turns out he wasn't really eligible to run because he doesn't actually live in the district. And he kind of sort of lied on his application or his candidate filing form, which that might pose some problems with the bar. He is a lawyer, after all. Now, what's interesting here is that Governor Roy Cooper, according to WRAL, Governor Cooper is going to get to fill the seat by appointment. Because this guy won, and he's a Democrat, but now there isn't anybody to take the seat, WRAL says that that means the governor makes the appointment. Now, I'm not so sure, because the guy isn't sworn into office. So what then occurs? Do we need a new election? It's actually a question that's going to be decided at some point today. I'm recording this podcast before this this Board of Elections hearing on this matter, so, and the decision, so I'm not sure how it's going to play out. But Gunther listed a Fuquay Varina address on his campaign paperwork, and he's registered to vote there. But he's actually been living in Cary, which is outside of this judicial district. There was an abundance of evidence, according to the Wake County Board of Elections chairman, Greg Flynn, who said some of it was overwhelming, and that Gunther's attorney, quote, basically admitted that the guy didn't live in the district, which is, you usually only see that kind of thing in like the Law and Order episodes, you know. Now, we're not sure what kind of repercussions Gunther might face. It is illegal to make false declarations on election paperwork. Now, what's really amazing on all of this is that Carolina Journal did this story back in October. They followed this guy and they nailed this guy over a month ago. And we're just now having the fallout from all of this. Carolina Journal reached Gunther by phone on October 14th and asked him where he lived. And he said, oh, he and his daughter rent a house in Fuquay Varina, which is where he would need to live. Carolina Journal then pointed out that his daughter and his former wife own that house. Okay, so this, so keep this, so you got Gunther and his ex-wife, Natalie, and his daughter, Alyssa. So Tim married to Natalie. We'll call them Tim Adderley, you know, in Hollywood fashion, Tim Adderley, and their daughter, Alyssa, okay? The house in Fuquay Varina was purchased by Natalie and Alyssa. And Alyssa lives there. She's registered to vote there. He said he's there too, though. He pointed out when Carolina Journal said that, he said, well, yes, it's true that they bought this house. He said he moved out of the Cary house, and he may fix it up and sell that house. Carolina Journal then asked him if other people also live in the Fuquay Varina house, and he said, yeah, his daughter's boyfriend and some other dude also live there. And then he hung up. Which, if all those people live there, it's a pretty crowded house, Carolina Journal reports. Wake County real estate records show 821 Hepplewhite Court is about 1,100 square feet, single-family home. And yeah, that's, I've lived in one of those homes, three bedroom, one bath, I assume. Alyssa is registered to vote there. So is her boyfriend. A Carolina Journal reporter saw them on the front porch shirtless. Well, he was shirtless and they have a photo. Not that you need to go see it, but if you want to, Natalie does not live there. The ex-wife does not live there. Real estate and voter registration records say that she lives in Apex. So there's a third house, okay? So ex-wife Natalie lives in Apex in like a 2,700 square foot home that she and Tim Adderley, right, that they owned jointly when they were married. But then she became the sole owner in 2005. And in 06, a year later, that's when Tim goes and buys this house in Cary. So he has owned this house for 14 years, okay? In 14 years, and he has been registered with the DMV, his driver's license and his and everything was all registered at that address. He paid off the mortgage as well there. And in December, this past December, 2019, he changes his driver's license to the house that his daughter lives in and owns with her boyfriend, or owns with her mom and lives in with her boyfriend and some other guy. Okay. So, I mean, it's just probably a roommate. I'm not casting aspersions or anything. But so it's obviously improper. It is quite obvious what's going on here, right? Local Republicans went out and hired a private investigator to look for him at both locations. And the Board of Elections Chairman Greg Flynn said that in a statement to the board, Gunther said that he intended to move to the district. But, you know, with COVID and everything, it just went awry. you were living in your carry house for over a decade, like 15, 16 years. And when you decide to run for office, then you move in with, you quote, move in with your daughter. Give me a break. You were not actually living there. You had no intention of moving into the district, right? You can't tell, you can't blame that on COVID because you filed to run for the office in December. I suspect what he was going to do was after he won, then he would probably try to sell the place. Flynn said that state law does not allow the board to elevate the second place candidate, Republican Beth Tanner, to the judgeship. State law allows the governor to fill vacancies on the district court bench from a slate of candidates that would be submitted by the local bar. So the Wake County Bar would then put forth somebody to replace this candidate who can't take office because he doesn't live there. So remember, I'm old enough to remember that the Democratic Party was very, very angry with the Republicans when they said, you know what, we should put the party ID on the ballot in the judge races again, because they used to be on there. So like when you go to vote, you can see, oh, here's, Judge Sherry Beasley. She's a Democrat. And the challenger is Paul Newby, and he's a Republican. You can see the D and the R next to their names. And for a while, they had taken those party identification labels off the ballot. And the Democrats did that, by the way. They did that because they said this would make it, you know, nonpartisan. They did it also because Republicans tend to do better in judicial races for some reason. Like people actually want law and order, and so they vote Republicans for the judgeships. Anyway, Republicans took over the General Assembly, and they started putting him back on the ballot. And Democrats were screaming about how this was going to undermine the judiciary. They were saying that just simply they were making the that they were politicizing the bench. They were making it these races partisan just by simply putting the D and the R next to the candidates' names on the ballot. Yet now what do we have? We have Governor Cooper in a position to put a replacement judge in that seat. Do you think he's going to go with the Republican Beth Tanner? He might. Upon recommendation from the local bar, do you think they would recommend her? They should, right? They should recommend her, and they should, Cooper should put her on the bench. Will he? No. I don't think so. Maybe he proves me wrong here. Oh, I'd love to be proven wrong on that. Now, I'll tell you what I'm not going to get proven wrong on is that General Equipment Rental is a great place to get your next tool for whatever project that you need. That you're working on, because they've got all the tools. They've got big tools and small tools. They've got air compressors. They've got scaffolding. They've got earth movers, and they got yard and lawn equipment. They've got it all. Large power tools, small ones, basically everything. I'm not going to list them all. Although I will tell you that right now, while supplies last, you can get the Husqvarna Auto Mower. 10% off while supplies last. This is a great idea for the person that mows your yard and doesn't really like to do so. Okay, and it is a cool piece of technology. It looks like the Batmobile. It just rides all around your yard all the time. And like all the time, it's constantly working. It's like me, basically. It's me, but mowing the yard. And also connected to an app. Although some people think my wife would say I'm connected to the Twitter app all the time, but that's okay. So this thing though, you connect it to the app and then it maps your yard and then it just docks itself to recharge. And if anybody steals it, this is a big concern. Like, well, what if someone takes it? It shuts itself off. It becomes basically useless once it breaks the perimeter of your yard. And at that point, then the GPS locator will help you track down the thief. So that's pretty cool, too. You can totally James Bond that stuff. Anyway, the Husqvarna Auto Mower, 10% off while supplies last at General Equipment Rental in Weaverville. It's at the intersection of Merriman Avenue and Reams Creek Road, family owned and operated for three generations. Great people. I've met the family. They're supporters of the show. So please support them as well and help keep the program going and help keep the business going and keep your dollars local. So General Equipment Rental in Weaverville, generalrents.com. And think outside your toolbox, folks. So next up here, what do we have? Oh, WRAL. I know it's like I feel like I'm starting to slip into Seth Efron mode. Seth Efron is the former communications guy for two former Democratic Party, Democratic governors, Bev Perdue and Mike Easley. And now he has a gig where he writes basically the same editorial on behalf of the Capital Broadcasting Company, which is the parent company for WRAL. And he writes the same editorial like every single day, and he gets paid for this. I assume he gets paid pretty well, but I don't know what he gets paid. And frankly, like you would never even know his name because he never signs it. It just says this is the opinion of the Capital Broadcasting Company. But that's different than WRAL. Right. It's different. Capital Broadcasting Company has an opinion and it owns WRAL, but this is not WRAL's opinion. OK, it's a very clear distinction there. That's why they don't sign it anyway. So every day he writes the same editorial. Now I feel like I'm kind of like doing the same thing by reading his editorials and just ripping them apart, because like I'm kind of doing the same thing now every day, too. But and I'm not going to make a habit of this. It just so happens that he had two pieces of idiocy published within a week. And so here I am again. You know, look, sometimes you have to do this work. Nobody else is doing it. North Carolina, he says, like much of the nation, saw record-setting voter turnout. North Carolina, like the rest of the nation, saw no election fraud. Okay, maybe... the opinion writer of Capital Broadcasting Company, maybe he should look at some other media operations before he writes these pieces, because as we went over the other day, WBTV has been doing a lot of stories and a lot of work exposing what happened in Anson County. You've got the husband and others, but the husband of a candidate who was buttonholing people in the parking lot and walking them into the polling station during early voting and standing with them in the voter booth as they voted, and at least one occasion actually did the ballot for a guy. And multiple complaints were filed, like dozens of them. And this could have affected hundreds of ballots. So I would submit that that is election fraud. That's election fraud. That's not voter fraud or vote fraud. It's election fraud, right? That is illegal activity. And it was permitted to occur throughout early voting by the Anson County Board of Elections. So maybe the former communications guy for two Democratic governors, who now writes the opinion pieces for WRAL's parent company, maybe they were unaware of this story. Maybe Seth Efron was unaware of this story. That's possible, because WRAL sure as heck fire hasn't really covered it. So that's possible. OK, the State Board of Elections is going to be meeting on November 24th. It's a Tuesday, to review and finalize state results, he says. OK, and then he goes on, because the headline here is that the election was secure. Start the presidential transition now. See, not satisfied with telling the state Republicans what to do and how to behave and to cave into the Democratic governor and the Democratic Party on all of their demands. Now he feels like, you know what? I need to be able to tell the president and national Republicans what they need to do as well. You need to do these things. It always amazes me, the tone of these editorial boards that they always take. Have you ever noticed this tone, which is, you need to do what I'm telling you to do? It's always the same approach. Does that work? I'm not sure. I don't think I take that approach. I offer solutions. Whether people take them or not, it's up to them. I'm just about providing solutions. That's all we do here, because we're givers. Exactly. I'm a giver. And so I give these ideas away for free. Anyway, anybody suggesting otherwise, that this wasn't a secure election, particularly state legislators who are the folks who wrote the state's election laws. Yeah, about that. I'll come back to that in a minute. So these people, if you're suggesting otherwise, you're either misinformed, ignorant, or purposely seeking to foster suspicion about the integrity of state elections workers. Oh, it can't be that there are actual stories that are out there. Can't be that. It can't be rooted in any kind of suspicion based on, you know, Democrats' behavior prior to the election and during the election. It can't, none of that suspicion is founded. Now, if you're suspicious that the place you've been going to get your military surplus might not actually be real U.S. military surplus, then get on over to Old Grouch's Military Surplus. And by the way, he's always looking for new and unique items. So if you've got some stuff that you're thinking about selling, please contact him at Old Grouch's Military Surplus, oldgrouch.com. He's got all the cold weather gear right now stocked up for the wintertime. So if you're a hunter or you work outside, this is perfect for you. Like Gore-Tex stuff, all military grade, like thermal underwear and wool socks and jackets and sweaters and fleece and toboggans. Also emergency kits for your cars. So if you make your kit now, God forbid anything happens on the road, and you go off the road or something, you're going to be prepared. You're going to have the space blanket to keep you warm. You're going to have emergency rations that will keep during hot or cold. You're going to have a shovel to help dig out. He can help you with all of this stuff. Old Grouch's Military Surplus in downtown Clyde. It's on Main Street. It's across the street from the anti-aircraft gun. It's worth the price of admission right there just to go and see the gun. It is amazing. And Tim will tell you all about the story. It's pretty crazy. The shop is open Monday through Saturday and at oldgrouch.com. So Seth Efron's editorial for the WRAL parent company says, you know, we haven't heard any of these winners from Election Day questioning the results. Yeah, funny how that works, isn't it? Why do you think that is? Is there a reason why the people who won might not be suggesting that there is election fraud or that the system is rigged? Right? I wonder why. But some of North Carolina's representatives in Washington have maintained inappropriately silent, or sorry, have remained inappropriately silent over the Trump administration's ill-informed refusal to initiate a transition. Given all of this, why haven't Senator Tillis, Tom Tillis, Senator Richard Burr, U.S. Representatives Greg Murphy, Virginia Fox, David Rauser, Richard Hudson, Dan Bishop, and Patrick McHenry, who are all in Congress now, why haven't they offered words in support of moving ahead with the transition? Again, none of these Republican incumbents have suggested any doubt as to their own reelection victories. So they're not saying that their own victories are suspect, only the president. So why won't they come out and support a transition? Okay, this is why I brought this to you. Because think of the blind spot one must have to demand that the North Carolina Congress people who have won re-election, to demand that they demand the president start the transition. And to cite as evidence for that, the North Carolina results only. Do you see the problem here? I saw it immediately. The North Carolina state U.S. representatives, they don't know what's going on in all of the other states that are being challenged right now. Why would their results in North Carolina have any bearing on the national results? So because you won in North Carolina in your one district, therefore, you need to call on the president to implement the transition, to start transitioning with the Biden administration or incoming, you know, potentially. Look, I don't know. This is one of the things. I am totally fine with letting the process play itself out. And at some point, these guys on the Trump team are going to have to make their case in court. And if they cannot make it in court, then you lost and it's over and transition away. That's the way it's got to happen. Otherwise, what are we talking about? I believe that this stuff happened, but I can't prove it. Oh, now you sound like Democrats, two-thirds of whom, by the way, believe that Russia hacked the election to change the vote totals to give Trump the win. Two-thirds of Democrats believe that. But now I'm supposed to believe that Republicans thinking the exact same thing about Democrats. Now that is a threat to our democracy. That's a wrap for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. I appreciate it. Remember, subscribe to the podcast. Also, think about becoming a patron. You'll get cool stuff and exclusive content. Links are all at thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thanks for your support. Talk with you later, and don't break anything while I'm gone.